to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 116. We talk with Bill Real about faith crises. That's in the second and third block. It's me, Richie T, and across the way from me, just Joni.
Here I am. It's just me.
Simple and unassuming. Just Joni.
I assume quite a bit, actually. Yeah.
Unassuming is not accurate.
No.
What do you assume?
I don't have anything specific, but in general, I'm an assumer.
Are you?
No.
Too much?
No. I'm just making it. I assume some things. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
What? What do you find yourself? Like, my biggest flaw is I assume that people are more closed-minded, I think, than anything. Like, I think I see people and I go, well, that's a closed-minded person.
I assume the best of people and then they hurt me.
Mm-hmm. Far too willing, far too open to people.
I'm trusting. I am a trusting person.
That'll get you every time.
I know, right? Stop being jerks, people.
You're still living in the apartment, right?
Yes.
Is that okay?
It's fine.
Yeah? Do the kids get restless?
Yes.
So what do you do about that? Because kids inside restless, that's the worst thing in the world.
Endure to the end, which will never come.
Well, it'll come eventually.
No. In our other house, we had computers, like rules about computers and TV and stuff, and I've lifted those rules.
Because you just don't want to deal with them.
Yep. The rules will reinstate when we have a home again, a house again.
I guess you might be digging your own grave.
Maybe, but if I don't, I'll be digging my grave before that.
Okay. So. I was just checking the finger tapping that you heard in the background on a keyboard. I was seeing where we are this week on our Stitcher app. We dropped. Last week we were 21. This week we were number 34.
Whoa, that's a big jump.
13. Don't give it too much. Don't give it too much credit. It's just 13. We'll get back up.
I know, but if we jumped 13 the other way,
we would have been number 8. That's some quick math we did together just there. We didn't get the episode published on Friday, like I said I would. So that contributes it.
Maybe.
That's it.
Okay.
That's what we're going to chalk it up to. Okay. So this week we'll bump like crazy.
Awesome.
We're coming for you, Joel Osteen.
Yeah.
He's number one. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes. I have an email I want to share.
I'd love to hear it.
This is from Karen. Says, hi, Cultural Hall. That's us.
Hi, Karen.
I was just listening to your articles of news from the 3rd of February. I'm behind, I know. And when you were discussing the story of the exhausted Mormon, DJ Rob said something that made me want to write you. He spoke about the youth being bored at church because because there is nothing for them. I believe that most of the problems with bored youth happen when the adults do too much work and don't give them any responsibility. Karen goes on, I live in a small stake in eastern Pennsylvania, and I work in the stake with the young women. Our stake presidency has been very focused on the youth, and they have encouraged us as stake leadership to seek out opportunities to give them more responsibility and make them fellow servants in the work of salvation. Our youth are actively involved in all parts of the youth programs, including the Sunday school and young women priesthood teaching. The youth in our stake have embraced the, quote, come follow me curriculum and are very excited at their turn to teach. Our goal as we implement the curriculum is conversion. The youth are aware of that goal and they are actively accepting that challenge. We look at all our activities in the stake as opportunities for those youth to become the leaders they will need to be as soon as they leave our youth program. These are definitely not, quote, Rob, bored youth. Unquote, that we worry about losing. These youth have accepted the challenge and are even pushing the adults to give them more responsibility. Our youth do not need to be pampered and coddled. I believe they need to be challenged. I believe that when given the opportunity, they will surprise you. Thank you for the fun show. They give me my connection to Zion. Her words, not mine. Yours truly, Karen.
That's interesting. When I listened to that episode with my husband, because I have been in the Young Women's Presidency before. And when they implemented Come Follow Me, we were like, great, we can have some of these young women teach. And we were instructed specifically to give them assignments, but do not allow them to teach the lesson.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I don't believe that that is a church policy. But I think that that was what our leadership instructed us to do. So interesting.
Yeah, different strokes, different folks. Mm-hmm. And as the Spirit directs, certainly. But that's cool. And that's definitely a way to not let people get bored.
Sure.
One of the things as I taught my Sunday school lesson yesterday was, man, it was everybody else teaching the lesson. It was Sodom and Gomorrah. And I let everybody else teach that lesson.
Was it teaching or was it spouting?
From me?
From everyone else.
No, it was teaching.
Awesome.
I have to hand it to the people in my ward as I teach. I put them on the spot to share.
Mm-hmm.
And people become vulnerable in a way that I've never seen happen in church service, and it is awesome.
That's the best. That's the very best.
Like when people share stories and people cry, and it's not like I'm crying, everyone look at me crying.
That's when people start loving each other. That's when the Spirit gets felt and testimonies grow. That's the best.
We had this talk and then we'll wrap this up and get to the second and third block. But we had a talk yesterday in church. My neighbor, who is a convert to the church, she got up and she spoke about how she was raised here in the state of Utah as a non-Mormon person. She converted when she was 26 after she was married to her husband, who was a member. And he actually had the opportunity to baptize her. So it's, you know, a pretty sweet story. But she talks about the heartbreak that she felt as she was told, you can't play with that girl because, you know, she's not a Mormon person. And then she talked about how, because they haven't been active the whole time that they've lived in our ward, and she talked about how she would notice at Christmas time and different times that people would receive gifts from other neighbors, and you could almost peg which were the Mormon households and which weren't, because that's where people would go and take things. And the non-Mormon households were where people wouldn't drop gifts. And so she talks about how she knows these people, and we're not doing ourselves any favors by, you know, just including the Mormon folk and excluding the non-Mormon folk. Now, certainly that's a thing for, you know, probably more specifically Utah, as people are listening. But that, you know, that happens everywhere. You know,
sure.
Be loving to everyone.
Well, and on the other side of the spectrum, I have been that Mormon person all my life who 9 of the houses out of 10 are Mormons, and then you've got that one and you don't really know them, and you don't know if, I mean, obviously if it's a Christmas gift, I don't know many people who are going to be mad that you bring them
a Christmas gift.
But I know that there is that feeling of, are they going to feel like they're a project to me if I go talk to them? Are they going to feel, you know, like I'm trying to push the church on them if I go invite them to come to this activity? It's an uncomfortable place for people who haven't been on that side. So,
but if you love them, I don't feel like people feel like there's a project. If it's just like, hey, I'm genuinely interested in you, whatever, we do church
and
stuff.
That's the key. That's the key. I think there are a lot of people who don't genuinely love them. They just feel like they should.
Yeah.
It's guilt-based.
So love people.
Do.
Like we love Bill Reel in the second and third block of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. 576 to book your shoot today.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and all the way from Sandusky, or Sandusky, depending on how you want to pronounce it, Ohio, it's Bill Reel, and we're going to all learn about him together. I know a few things about him, and but I'm sure that it will be a fantastic journey into, well, not only, a trial of faith, but furthering the discussion about Mormonism online. We'll get into all that stuff and talk about what it's like to be a bishop, I think, will be part of this discussion. How are you doing, Bill?
I'm grateful to be on with you, Richie, and looking forward to this interview.
Well, Bill, let me ask you this. Are you a lifetime member of the LDS Church?
No, I'm a convert. Joined the church at the age of 17. I was in my senior year of high school. Met a wonderful girl, and we began dating. I thought Mormons were all those folks out in Utah who had lots of wives. So I was quite surprised to hear that she was a Latter-day Saint. And from there, I started going to church with her, taking the discussions. And she flirted to convert, and it worked.
Did she admit that she flirted to convert?
No, no, that wasn't her motives at all, but I'm doubtful.
So you know where she was maybe at, but she will never right. cop to it.
You got it.
Did you serve a mission as a young convert?
No, you know, that's the one thing I regret not doing. Right after I joined the church, our bishop sat down with me and asked me if I wanted to go on a mission. Said that the ward would be able to help because obviously I hadn't had time to save money and prepare. And my testimony was pretty fragile early on, and so I turned him down. But it's the one thing, looking back, if I had to change in my life, that would be it. I would have gone on a mission.
So what, right off to school?
Well, I as soon as I finished my senior year of high school, I went into Bowling Green State University's elementary education program. Spent 3.5 years at college, but eventually decided that that wasn't the right track for me. My wife was pregnant with our first son, and probably the wrong decision long-term, but I quit school and ended up just taking a job to put food on the table.
That's a pretty pretty big decision for a what then 21-year-old having a kid, especially where is the culture in your family or were your upbringing to get married that young and start a family that young?
Everybody in my family had gotten married pretty young, and I was the first person in my family to go to college, and my dad is one of 8 kids. So of all of his, you know, all of them and each of the grandchildren of my grandparents, that I was the first one to go to college. So, and then I've got a cousin who luckily did one step better than me, and my brother as well. They both finished.
And Bowling Green State University, home of the tractor pull, for those who don't know, the big Bowling Green tractor pull. Did you go to that while you were there?
No, never did that. They've got a couple of campuses, and so they have one campus that's near my home.
Oh, so you didn't even go to Bowling Green to go to Bowling Green State.
No, I went to Fireland's campus, which is part of Bowling Green, but nowhere near the main campus, about an hour away.
Oh, Bill. So then what?
Yeah, I missed the tractor pull.
So you take a job as a what?
I'm a floor covering salesman. So I go out, I measure houses, draw up blueprints, figure up square feet or square yards for hard surface or carpet and other flooring goods, and I work the sales floor. So I'm just your typical carpet salesman.
You do linoleums? You got linoleums in there?
You know, a lot of people ask that, but in reality, linoleum is a very rare product anymore. What most people, when they say linoleum, they mean sheet vinyl. And so it's one of those things, right? I mean, how are you going to learn something from a carpet salesman? But I'm here to send out a bunch of new information.
So look at what we've already learned. Let's just recap real quick.
Got it.
Bowling Green State University, not in Bowling Green, Ohio. And linoleum,
right.
Not linoleum.
You got it.
So so you're married, then you have what, a couple more kids? Catch me up to the point where you become the bishop of your ward out there.
Oh, sure. I've got 4 children from the ages of 15, 13, 11, and 8. And my 4 kids are awesome. They're incredible. My wife's awesome. When I joined the church at 17, it was maybe a few years later, I was called as an elders quorum president. And then at the age of 29, I was called to be the bishop of our ward.
Now, being called, hold on. Being called to be the elders quorum president after only being a member of the church for a little while, intimidating? Because sometimes I feel like we give new members of the church these big callings pretty quick, and it can be really intimidating.
I didn't think so. It's kind of a strange, maybe, paradigm. I think most people, when they join the church, they're not really going out and reading a ton of information. Just to be frank, a lot of converts struggle to even be two feet in right off the back, which is why our retention rates are as low as they are. But I was different. I read everything. I studied everything. I got every book I could chew on. And so when I joined the church, I really had a pretty good grasp of what it was and what it claimed to be and the role that it claimed for itself. So when I was getting callings, I was both feet in, and and I look forward to opportunities for church leadership.
And not to mention that, but you also had the support of a wife who, as it sounds, is pretty strong in the gospel, and you know, surrounding yourself in a familial life so that there was that structure for you as well, that commitment kind of in conjunction with the church.
No, absolutely. You're right. I mean, it's a tough enough thing to jump into a church. I grew up with no religion at all, and so I went from being a agnostic young man who only prayed when he needed a new bicycle to joining a religious faith that is about as complex and deep and rich as you can find. And having a wife and in-laws who also were strong in the church were a big help.
Did you ever get a new bicycle?
I did, but I don't know that it was close enough to the prayers to be Heavenly Father's influence rather than just my parents getting me something for Christmas or for my birthday.
Well, you don't know, Bill. You don't know.
You're right. Tender mercies of the Lord are out there.
There we go. So age 29, you become a bishop. Boom. Surprised?
No, I knew it was coming for about a year. And
wait a minute. How do you know that? How did you know it was coming?
Well, as a certainly a faithful member of the church, I believe that our Father in Heaven reaches out to us at times with inspired information and little glimpses into choices that we're to make or things to prepare for. And so about a year before I became the bishop, I began having this overwhelming feeling that I kept to myself, but felt like this was going to be a calling that was coming very soon. And so I started to take little notes of things that I wanted to make sure that I did or did differently, or things that I wanted to work on that I felt Heavenly Father kind of whispering to me that those were the things to do. So I felt some promptings quite in advance of the calling. And so when the stake president's executive secretary called me, I pretty much knew what was going on.
Scared? I know a lot of bishops will say once they get in, they've thought about being a bishop before, but then the actual mantle of being a bishop comes on them, and then it's like, oh my gosh, overwhelming.
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's a night and day thing in the sense that going into it, I was excited. I was looking forward to lots of things that Heavenly Father had been impressing me with that I need to work on or to do within that calling. But then, and you think about all the good things that are the positives of that responsibility, but shortly thereafter, you feel the weight of that mantle. And in that, heaviness, you begin to realize that there are, yes, lots of blessings, but there are also lots of challenges in trials and hardships that come with a calling of that nature as well.
Now let's talk about your ward and everything like that. Northern Ohio, the Ohio Cleveland Mission is actually where I served my mission. I never served in Sandusky, so we never met. But give people kind of the lay of the land of what Sandusky and that part of the country is like as far as the church goes.
Sure. As far as like ward boundaries, our ward covers like three counties and about 11 cities. And it takes an hour to go from one side of our ward boundary to the other. So we cover quite an expansive geographic area. We have a temple 2 hours south of us in Columbus, Ohio. Our stake center is about an hour east of us in Westlake, which is near Cleveland, home of the Cleveland Browns, who I'm a big fan of, but they're struggling a decade and a half now.
I didn't even realize they had a team anymore.
they took it away once. They're now working towards the second time around when the fans will take it more seriously and just let it go.
Yeah, if they're not careful, they are going to lose it for sure.
You got it. So that kind of gives you an idea as far as geographics. Our ward membership is about 410 families, or 410 members, I'm sorry, about 130 families or so. And we get a regular attendance on Sunday somewhere between maybe 90 and 120. And on, you know, maybe for a month or two stretch during the year when some people are here to visit the roller coaster park that's in my hometown, Cedar Point, we might get up to about 140, maybe tops 150.
And You mentioned that the temple is 2.5 or 2 hours to the south, but there's also one in Kirtland. Please don't disregard the temple in Kirtland.
No. Yeah, there's a temple in Kirtland. Absolutely. Of course, you know, members keep thinking someday we're going to get that back, but I'm pretty sure the Community of Christ is going to hang on to that one.
Yeah, that'll be the last thing that the Community of Christ will sell off for sure.
You got it, right?
As I'm reading about you online, I read about a massive trial of your faith. Let's go there.
Sure. So before I joined the church, I read a book by Fawn Brody, No Man Knows My History, which took everything the missionaries were teaching me and twisted it, turned it upside down, and shattered it in pieces. So very early on, I got into studying out questions and looking for answers through the internet, found enough answers, and combining that with an answer to my prayer over the Book of Mormon, I joined the church and absolutely was faithful, 2 feet in, fully believing. And when I started later on in the church, when I was serving as a bishop, it wasn't so much some of those difficult, complex answers that bothered me. I felt like the answers for those were okay. My issue was that it felt like, and I always say the word felt because I think there's a difference in reality between what we always feel like is occurring and what actually is going on. But I felt like the church didn't really teach all those things openly, and that they were doing it in a sense to hide things from me, so that I wouldn't discover the real history of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I kind of waded my way through that, I hit a real bottom. I was very close to asking to be released from my calling. I was real close to just kind of taking a step back from my activity, maybe just sitting in the back of the chapel and just kind of taking myself out of participation.
So at this time, sure. Is it when you were the bishop of the ward that you were experiencing this?
It was. My absolute low moment came about 3 years into being bishop.
And if you don't mind sharing, or if you feel like it's appropriate, what were the things that, like, specifically that you were like, man, this thing?
I don't know that there's one specific thing. I think it was a combination of stuff. So I remember giving a talk in my ward once about Joseph Smith and the translation process, and I'm talking about Joseph using seer stones, and nobody else in the ward had a clue. A member of the bishopric came up to me afterward, and this is prior to me being bishop. This is just things leading up to it. But a member of the ward came up to me afterward and said, I never knew that Joseph used the seer stone. And as I started to kind of gauge the rest of the ward, the rest of the ward was completely unaware of polyandry or seer stones or treasure digging or any of those complexities. You know, Jesus didn't drink wine. He drank grape juice and all these other little speculations that we thrive on, and the real deep, rich, actual history, members seem to be completely unaware of most of that stuff. And it kind of felt like we're living in the church, but we're really not living with a realistic paradigm. And I started to ask myself, and this is moving ahead now, I'm the bishop of the ward, and as we go into this, I'm feeling like, why don't we know these things? Why is it that I'm the only one, and the only way I find it is by searching every crevice on the internet, I find these things, but that ward members just in general don't have this as any kind of general knowledge. And so I began to think about why that is, and the original thought was I felt like the church was hiding things from us.
But that's obviously not where you resided with it. So how did you overcome all that?
Well, that's an interesting story. When I was serving as, again, this is still the same time, serving as bishop, I had a sister in our ward call me up. And she has a daughter who has been inactive for maybe a decade. And this daughter had just gotten onto this anti-Mormon, just this spiel of picking up every anti-Mormon book she could and wanting to tell her mom how false the church was that she had joined. And so her mom says, could you bring somebody over who could answer these questions? And of course, I felt like, maybe I'm wrong, I mean, if somebody in my ward hears this interview and wants to come to me and say, I'm aware of all these things, please do. But I felt like I was the only one in the ward who was equipped to handle this.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to her house, and the mom meets me at the door, welcomes me in. I go sit down in the front room, and the daughter has all these books laid out, three or four anti-Mormon books, Grant Palmer's Insider's View. I don't know if she had Fawn Brody's, but she had two or three others. And she begins to just give me like the hard questions, just start asking. But she didn't go right to the point. She would start by trying to get me to go down a certain road, and I could tell where she was going. So I answer all these questions, and I get done, maybe I'm there for an hour and a half or so, just answering all the complex questions of, you know, Joseph being accused of sexual promiscuity, which leads to the tarred feathering at the Johnson's farm, was one of the things she brought up.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several others. And the last thing she says, I answer all the questions. She says, you did a good job answering all those, but here's my problem. Why didn't I know that? And this young lady, she had joined the church. She was active for about 5 years before going inactive. And so on some level, she felt like she had a right to know this information, and yet she never discovered it through the church. And all of a sudden, it's kind of strange. She's asking the questions that I'm asking in the back of my head. And yet here I am. I'm Bill the Bishop talking to essentially Bill the Member with these same questions. And all of a sudden, it just hits me. There's no way as Bishop of the Ward, even knowing this stuff, that I could tackle this stuff in a church setting. If I go into Sunday school and spend an hour talking about the Book of Abraham, most members don't care. Most members aren't going to feel the spirit from that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really not an appropriate thing to teach. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what if I have a fireside? Okay, and I told her this. I said, well, I could have a fireside, and I could talk about an issue, but only a fifth of the ward comes to the fireside, so not everybody gets it. So I got to have the fireside five or six times to get half the ward to know what's going on. And by the time I do that, some of the members have moved out, some have moved back in. There's just no easy way in the three-hour block to disseminate answers to critical questions in a way that spends a ton of time on those. I mean, you can sprinkle them in, and I think the church is now doing that. But but there was no way to cover those things in a large way without taking the spirit out of the meeting and without talking about something that most people could care less about.
Do you feel like that's why, as the church, we don't talk about those things? Is because there's just not enough time to get in it, or because of the apathy of members?
Well, I think that's one reason. We don't have enough time. I think another one is that when we get off on those kinds of topics, so few people are aware of the information that you run the risk of a lot of conflict and anger and frustrating discussion if you raise things that other people are unaware of and they go on the defensive about. The other issue, too, if you were to go into a meeting and spend, you know, a lot of time on, say, the Book of Abraham, you're gonna miss out on covering the important stuff, which is the doctrine of Christ, the atonement, the idea that Jesus died and was resurrected. And so you just don't get to the important things if you spend time on that stuff. And the other side note, too, is, again, maybe 2-5% of members care about that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there is some sort of, blessing about people not caring about that stuff? Like an ignorance truly is bliss.
That's a good question. And I guess the way I would frame my answer is that some people will ask me if I could go back to where I was before I really thought this deeply about all this complex stuff and go back to the point where my testimony was absolutely, you know, just naive and easy, I wouldn't do it in a second. And so I do think that members like to put the blinders on sometimes and simply just not deal with anything outside the three-hour block. But I honestly would disagree and say that in reality, having that complex understanding, knowing the nuance in our church history and our church narrative, for me is a lot more beautiful than where I was. So I wish more of us were interested in getting deeper into the church and its history. But I certainly recognize how there's this safety in just putting those blinders on and being unaware of it. So I guess, you know, I know your listeners come from that informed group, and I don't know what they would say, but just for me, it's more beautiful where I'm at now than where I was.
Well, I think it's the more you know about things, the more you appreciate it. But there's certainly that attitude that it's like you don't ask questions, you just do. You just do those things. Oh, I don't know. That doesn't concern me. And there have been some things that have come about in my life where I've just had to go, you know what? I don't know. And I look forward to the time when I will figure it out. But, I mean, those are pretty few and far between, especially with historical things within the church. I feel like, especially with the internet, as you pointed out now, there are a lot of things that we can really get to the bottom of it and go, oh, okay, so that's really what happened.
Right, and I would add to just a personal story. I not too long ago was teaching a lesson on following the Spirit, and I was using quotes from Brigham Young where he says that we shouldn't just blindly trust the leaders of the church, that we should be in touch with the Spirit and know when our leaders are leading us in the right path. I shared the quote from Hugh B. Brown that talks about that we as members, if we're informed, should not be afraid to dissent. And even using those quotes, I had members jump at me and essentially say, no, we trust the brethren explicitly. Anything they say, we do, we follow at all cost. And I'm like, no, that's not what we're supposed to do, right? We're not supposed to be blind, obedient followers, that we're supposed to be informed. We're supposed to use the Spirit. We're supposed to recognize that prophets are fallible. And we often, intellectually, we get that. But anytime somebody wants to say things along those lines, the majority of membership get very nervous and cringe and are very hesitant to actually apply those principles.
Coming up in the third block, I want to talk about Mormon discussions, and I also want to talk about Fair Mormon. Is that cool? Can we get into that stuff?
That sounds great.
All right, coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the third block here at the Cultural Hall, and all the way from Sandusky, Ohio, Bill Real. You know, I never got to serve in Sandusky. I got to serve in Westlake, so I did get to know where the Stake Center was and everything like that, but I never got to see Cedar Point on my mission. I never got to be in Sandusky, but I think for only one afternoon, and if I remember correctly, I was on exchanges with another missionary, and we knocked doors of a woman, and this is true, and actually now as I tell it, I know that it was Sandusky. We knocked the door of a woman who was probably about 70 years old, and she came to the door in her bathrobe, and it was early. It was probably one of the first doors that we knocked that day, and she came to the front door, and she had not properly covered up all of her chest. And I remember and this is the kind of stuff that happens to missionaries all the time, though why we don't talk about it, I don't know. One of her breasts was out of her nightrobe, and she had no idea that was occurring. But there were only two times on my mission where I was not able to get through an entire door approach. And that was one of them, because she was there, her breast was hanging out, it was my turn to do the door approach, and I just started giggling like crazy. I couldn't get past it. And that's all I know about Sandusky.
gotcha. So you may have, you know, blown the chance to share the gospel with her, and she may have missed out forever.
Well, as I recall, my companion, as we were just laughing, and she didn't know what we were laughing at, gave her a pass-along card and said, if you have any questions, we'd love to talk to you. Have a great day. And we chuckled and just laughed and walked away from it. But it was, hands down, one of the top five funniest experiences on my mission, where I just was like, that's your breast. I can't focus. What are we doing? Are we missionaries? I got to go. And just giggle and laugh away. All right, that's not what we're talking about. Oh, go ahead.
Sure, I was going to say this. The funny part is, as soon as she walked back in that door, she probably realized before too long what had occurred.
We never heard from her, strangely enough.
Okay.
all right, so let's go. Do you want to do Fair Mormon, or do you want to do Mormon Discussions first?
Well, let's talk about Mormon Discussion first.
Okay.
Do you want to ask a question? You want me to just kind of go right into it?
I would like you to just go into it.
Awesome. Having come out of my faith crisis, I realized that we as Latter-day Saints set up lots of false assumptions.
Like what?
Like prophets are infallible.
They're not infallible? Is that what you're telling me?
I am. It's hard to believe. And again, I think most Mormons understand that intellectually. But in application, it's a struggle, right? We always have that quote about, you know, Catholics say the Pope is infallible, but nobody believes it. And Mormons say the prophet's fallible, and nobody believes it. And so I think that certainly holds very true. And so noticing these false assumptions that we as Latter-day Saints make, I felt like there was nobody out there who was coming down to the level of those who were struggling in the midst of a huge trial of faith, in helping them emotionally have someone to connect with, but at the same time help them to try and fix these things so that they can lead with faith again. And so I started a podcast, mormondiscussion.podbean.com, which essentially, for those who listen to it, will find that I'm pretty frank about the difficult issues. I don't try to take the high road of just always speaking positive about everything. So I try to tackle the difficult issues. I've interviewed different authors and scholars that have a expertise in some of these complex problems. But at the end of the day, I always lead with faith. I try to get people to say, hey, you know what? You can break these things down. You can tear it apart. You can put it back together. And when you're finished, there's still room for faith. And so that's what my podcast tries to do.
Is it? Would you consider it to be a safe ground? Because I know a lot of people, when they go, okay, we're going to talk about heavy doctrinal or historical questions, is my testimony going to be safe in this environment?
I sure hope so. I've been doing this for about, a year and a half, 2 years now, and I get about an email a week from somebody listening, and every single one of them is positive. I've not had anybody email me and say that their testimony's been hurt by my podcast. I've even gotten emails from non-members who like to listen to it, who just have an interest in Mormonism,
mm-hmm.
who quite enjoy it. But I think it's pretty remarkable. I've expected at least to have one or two messages by now from someone whose faith was tried because of the podcast. But I get emails from spouses whose husbands or wives are in the midst of a faith crisis. They appreciate the podcast for their perspective. I have those who struggle, who say it's a lifeline. And again, pretty much every end of the spectrum, everybody's saying that it is a positive thing. Now, that said, like I said, I deal with the issues frankly, and so we talk about the fallibility of prophets. We talk about what was actually going on with Joseph's treasure digging, or at least what we can figure out from the historical record, and the way in which the Book of Mormon was translated, and polygamy and polyandry and all those other things. But we try to do so always leading with faith, trying to at least show people that once you delve into the deeper history, there is a way to make it work.
So do each of the episodes of Mormon Discussions, is it like Joseph Smith polygamy, and that's what that particular episode is about?
Well, I do three different things. I'll have some episodes where I just talk, and I'll just lead right into a issue. So I might start off saying, what is tithing and what's it supposed to be paid on? And in the process of that episode, I tear down the false assumption that tithing can only be paid on gross, and show people that it's really between them and the Lord, and that there's multiple interpretations that are valid.
Yeah, it's net. It's net. You'll save money if you pay on net. There, I solved that problem right there.
Well, yeah, but at the end of the day,
I'm just teasing.
Right, I get it. But some people will do that. They'll use those that information to justify what they're doing. But I always try to point people back to the Spirit. I'm a big fan of Moroni chapter 7, which says the way to judge is those things that bring you closer to Christ or from God. And if we point people back to the Spirit, give them the flexibility, say, hey, you know, this is how we interpret the word of wisdom or tithing or a multitude of other commandments. There's some flexibility in them, but at the end of the day, it's between you and the Spirit of the Lord if the church has not doctrinally spelled it out. And on some things, they have. Mm-hmm. And so with those, there are lines in the sand. But for the lines in the sand that are unnecessary, I try to wipe those away.
But even with the ones that we line out in the sand, we still go, but for me, it's different.
Right. Yeah, we do. We justify things, and we got to be careful of that. The other thing I do is I interview different scholars. And so I've had Stephen Harper on. We've talked about the first vision. I've had Brad Wilcox on. We've talked about grace. I've had Mark Ashurst McGee on, and we've talked about the Church History Department and the Joseph Smith papers. And so I've interviewed a multitude of, experts in their field or scholars in their field, and hoping to continue doing that as well. And then the other thing I've done, too, is I've interviewed individuals who have had a faith crisis and come back and give them a chance to just share their story.
So on that third one, is it just stories of it literally is just their story of here was my question, here's where I struggled, and then they come back and that's all those particular episodes are?
Yeah, I mean, they'll be an hour or two long, and it'll give that person a chance just to share the path they went down that led to their faith crisis. For some of them, it was leaving the church, and then to help them share how they came back. And I think doing those three things, one, just talking about different issues in the church, two, interviewing scholars, and three, giving people a chance to share their faith journey, I think it gives a well-rounded perspective to those struggling that, hey, you know what? One, there's other ways to see things. Mm-hmm. Two, there are people who are scholars in these areas who certainly are still faithful and lead with faith. And three, there are people who have had a faith crisis like me who have fallen away, and they have found ways to make it back. So I should never discount the chance that I can put things back together.
So people that don't know about Fair Mormon, let's talk about that for a minute.
Absolutely. Most people who delve into the internet looking for answers to tough questions will come across FAIR, which is what they used to be called, and it was an acronym for the Foundation of Apologetic Information and Research.
Which is horribly named.
Right, because you have this word apologetics, which for most people, the first thing they think of is someone's apologizing, and no Mormon wants a group of Mormons apologizing for their faith.
Right.
But in reality, apologetics is the root word to that is to defend. And so essentially apologetics is somebody who defends a position. And so we got to kind of correct that, I guess, off the back.
So now it's called, you're saying it's called something else. What is it now called?
It is now called Fair Mormon, and it is Fair Answers to Critical Questions. And the website has changed quite a bit. If you haven't been on Fair in a while, it's a beautifully well-designed, updated website. There's lots of links there on the main page at fairmormon.org. And there's several new things they've got. One thing they've been working on for a couple of years, and it's pretty well along, which is the Fair Mormon Wiki. And it's just a database of lots of answers to different categories of questions. They also have a new discussion board, which is found at fairmormonsupport.org. And this is a discussion board where people can go in the midst of their challenge or faith crisis, or perhaps a friend or loved one of someone who's struggling, and they can go into this discussion board and ask whatever questions they want, knowing that other people there have been through similar things, have spent years providing answers to these questions. There's going to be no blaming the questioner or saying that certain questions aren't allowed if you want to go on there and ask anything. As long as you do it with the spirit of wanting to return to faith or lead with faith, anything's fair game.
What's your involvement with the fairmormon.org?
Well, I am a volunteer with the organization. I also contribute to their podcast, which I believe is, you can go to fairblog.org, and that'll take you to the site. I'm not sure that that's the actual link, but I know that if you type that in, that'll take you there, fairblog.org. And so I contribute a lot to their podcast along with doing my own. And I'm just a volunteer there, too. So if you send a question into FAIR or participate in the support board, I'll be one of the voices that you'll have, I guess, throwing out answers to you and offering emotional support in your trial of faith.
What is the name of the FAIR Mormon podcast?
It is just called FAIR Blog. And I was going to say, I could probably pull it up really quick, but...
I will include with this episode at theculturalhall.com a link to it. I just wanted to give people the name of what it was so that everyone could, I would assume, find it on either Stitcher or iTunes, places where you find like Mormon discussions and also The Cultural Hall.
Yeah, if you look up FAIR Blog and you don't find it that way, type in FAIR Mormon Blog, FAIR Mormon all being one word, FAIR MORMON, and it should come up. I know it's a pretty popular podcast among Mormon podcasts on iTunes, so it shouldn't be too hard to find.
Yeah, they call it the Mormon FAIRcast, and it is just blog.fairmormon.org. You mentioned that you're a volunteer for it. Is there anyone within that organization that does get paid, or is it strictly volunteer?
As far as I know, it is completely a volunteer organization from the top down. And so there is no paid leadership. The only person I think they have paid is the guy who manages their bookstore. He's paid just because of the time involved, but everybody else is on a volunteer basis.
So a tremendous resource for people like yourself, or like how yourself was, or even for yourself now, to be able to not only go there and be able to find links to people who have been through similar experiences, but also, as you just mentioned, books to deal with their questions of faith, and also just the different articles and discussions. And people can go to blog.fairmormon.org. I'm looking at it right now.
And you'll find, too, that there are lots of people out there who see FAIR as maybe antagonistic or whatnot. My experience has been the opposite. Every person who's come on asking questions, who is sincere, and the FAIR guys and gals do a good job of assuming someone's sincere until they come on and just absolutely are anti and throwing questions out to try and tear things down. But for those who come on and just ask questions and throw their struggle out there, I think the FAIR volunteers just respond incredibly well, both with love and with good answers and information to help people kind of put things back together. And some people are just looking for an answer to a question. Other people come deep in crisis, and I think FAIR does a good job of reaching out to both groups.
How do you feel like the church is handling it? I know FAIR Mormon is kind of a group of members of the church, but it's not from the main body of the church. How do you feel like we are dealing with it as a church?
That's excellent. And it's really a twofold answer. If you'd have asked me that 2 years ago, I would have said horribly. Because they were doing very little. Other than the Joseph Smith papers kind of being in the works, there was very little going on. And then all of a sudden, you find the church realizing that the internet is posing a problem, and so they're working their tail end off to kind of match all that's out there that's on the negative with the positive. Mm-hmm. And so you see on LDS.org all these articles that are coming out. You see the church in conference talks with Elder Uchtdorf saying the church has made mistakes, or Elder Holland saying that, for one just to believe and have some doubt that that's okay. But I think in the last 12 months or so, it's apparent that the church was a little behind in getting out front and doing this, but that they're doing a marvelous job of putting these things together, and we should expect a lot more to come, and including, from what I hear, an updated adult curriculum that will be in some ways similar to the youth curriculum that just came out a year ago.
Well, and as you point out, and as you see online, even just in the last couple of weeks with things like Blacks in the Priesthood and Joseph Smith and the different occurrences or different explanations of the first vision, that the LDS Church, LDS.org itself has put out, to just really say, hey, you know what, here's a source of information where before, like you mentioned, you would go on and there wouldn't be any information coming from the church to people. People within the church were doing it, but not from the from the church itself.
Right. I mean, you could have gone on to LDS.org 1 year ago and went into their search bar and typed in polyandry, and you would have gotten not one single article or link to that topic, which seems odd, but now that's no longer the case. And so you can find that, and I think there might only be a few at this point if you did a search for that word, but you're going to find here, I think, within the next year or two, that some of these things get discussed a lot more and become more in the open, and which is a positive, because now if it's in the open, as a member on church in the three-hour block, when a question comes up, rather than just kind of speaking your own two cents and everybody putting up their walls against you, now you've got a source on LDS.org to point people towards and say, hey, guys, we could all kind of be more aware of this issue by checking out this information here on the church's site.
And there's certainly an element of honesty and, like, there's not that doubt of, well, why have they been hiding it for me? You know what I'm saying? By having that kind of forthrightness. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I want to ask you, do you think that these are the motions? A couple years ago, Elder Marlon K. Jensen spoke about a mass exodus nowadays in the church because of the internet and all the historical information that was made available for people to search. Do you feel like this is going to be able to truly combat that mass exodus?
I think that you're always going to have people who leave the church having felt like they've discovered something that was contradictory. I think our church history is just too complex for one conclusion to be the only way you arrive at. So I think there's always going to be people that leave. But in regards to a mass exodus, which Elder Jensen said we haven't seen the likes of since Kirtland, and realizing that about, I think, a third of the leaders or so left the church at that time, and kind of giving you the scale of that apostasy, I realized that I think putting this stuff out, what it's going to do is it's going to allow us to have more discussion just in our common conversations, and for it not to be something that we can, you know, just put up our defensive walls and push people away on. And by doing that, I think it allows everybody to be more comfortable with the complexity. And if we can get there, if people can get from seeing things a very black and white way to being able to handle complex, nuanced information where multiple conclusions become valid, I think we can stem this in a large chunk of it and help members to stay, to put things back together, or to never have gone down the road where they see it in such a way that it's now going to be a barrier to faith when they discover new things. That the next generation of Mormons aren't going to have these barriers to faith that I think the Latter-day Saints of 20 years ago did.
The big thing for me in all of this, and what you've said and what I've said and in what's available, is if people are struggling and people have questions, you are not alone in your questions and you're not alone in the struggling. So before you decide that, you know, that you can't work it out or that the church isn't for you, reach out to some of these folks. Reach out to fairmormon.org. Reach out and listen to Mormon discussions or to the Faircast or to any of these books that you can get available at fairmormon.org, or reach out here to the Cultural Hall. You can go to theculturalhall.com and contact us, and we'd be willing to help you try and find the answers and the faithful way to find your way through these difficult times. I think that...
Yeah, as I say, you know, the one thing I always fear, you have somebody in their ward who's discovered this information, the deeper history of the church, and they have nobody to talk to in their ward. Their bishop isn't aware of it. Their stake leaders aren't aware of it. Their family doesn't want to hear these kinds of questions and feels like it's a bad attitude to have. But in reality, somebody just needs a person to talk to and to kind of work these things through. And if we don't provide that, then people undoubtedly will leave. But I think we're doing a much better job of being open about the role of faith and doubt in allowing people to not feel ostracized by asking questions.
Do you have a calling in your ward right now? Are you still the bishop?
I am the ward mission leader.
There you go.
So I am sending missionaries out to those doors that you talked of earlier when you met the lady in Sandusky.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, whether it be one that exists or one that you would have to make up, what calling would you pick?
Well, I'll tell you two. One is I would love to be the gospel doctrine teacher. I would love to have the opportunity to sprinkle in some of this complex stuff, but from a faithful perspective every once in a while. And the other calling I think every stake should have is they should have somebody who is aware of these issues, who understands the emotional part of a faith crisis, and have them be like a faith crisis specialist, something along those lines in every stake. And I'd love to do that too.
What is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith, I love grace, and it's something that Latter-day Saints, I think, have ignored for way too long. I think in an effort to separate ourselves from evangelical Christianity, we've downplayed grace. But when I went back and read the Book of Mormon, and realizing, maybe if I can just use one scripture as an example, Ether 12:27, we realized from that scripture that God gave us our weakness. He's the one who made us the natural man. And obviously that means we're going to fall short. When we fall short, Christ is hopeful that we'll humble ourselves and turn back to him. And when we do that, he makes our weaknesses strengths. And it's grace, that enabling power of Jesus Christ, that allows us to do all those things we can't do on our own. And so I always like to kind of reiterate what Brother Bob Millett and Brother Brad Wilcox always say, which is we are saved by merits, but they're not ours. They're Christ's merits. And so I'm a huge fan of grace.
Bill, give everyone your website again so they can find it. And then the other one we mentioned was fairmormon.org. What's yours?
Mine is mormondiscussion.podbean.com. So Mormon Discussion, one word, .podbean.com. And then Fair Mormon is just fairmormon.org, Fair Mormon all being one word, fairmormon.org. And at that site there, you'll have 10 or 12 different links you can kind of go off to, depending on what your situation is and what kind of answers you're looking for and what kind of support you need.
We hope that this show has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, you will be healthy enough to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you, Bill, on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.